The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The speaker is Mark Nunberg, guiding teacher at Common Ground.
Well, welcome, everybody. Can you hear me all right? Okay, so for our day of forgiveness, I feel as though I should introduce myself. I know all of you, or most of you probably know Mark Nunberg, our guiding teacher, and I am Wynn Fricke. I'm his partner, and usually I'm sitting out there with you all, but today I'm here, and we'll see how it goes. And I'm co-founder of Common Ground. So, yeah, Common Ground grew up in our house, 7 blocks down on 26th Street, and it's always so inspiring to me to see kind of how it has bloomed into the sangha that it is today. So appreciate everyone being here. So just a few guidelines for today. So today is not in noble silence. So when you go out for your breaks, for lunch, you know, feel free to chat. Part of what we do on these day-longs are kind of get to know our neighbors, get to know the sangha. And also everything that we say today, just keep it in confidence, okay? Whether it's in the group sharings or the small group. So it just helps to keep the container safe as we explore kind of this real sensitive area of forgiveness. And also when you speak, share directly from your experience. So, you know, it's easy to get off in theory, but I think, just connecting deeply to what your experience is, whether you were sharing in the large group or sharing in the small groups. And also, I encourage you not to feel anonymous here. You know, sometimes I know that that pattern can be in myself, where I just kind of want to show up and be a witness and, you know, whatever. But, you know, we can feel responsible to each other and recognize the shared wisdom in the room and, just be on this learning journey together. So just to go over just the schedule today, Mark is going to offer just a guided reflection and just sort of talk a little bit about the principles of forgiveness. So what do we mean when we say forgiveness? What is it? What is it not? We'll have a break, about a 15-minute break, and then I'll offer some a guided meditation just about kind of offering forgiveness to ourselves and talk a little bit about kind of the sense of unworthiness, the harm that we can do to ourselves, just kind of venture into that territory. Then we'll have a lunch and, a standard forgiveness meditation, which is sort of more traditional. And then I'll follow that with just working with really difficult emotions, afflictive emotions like rage and hate. How do we deal with that? All right, and we will end with Mark's reflections on the role of wholesome mind states. So that's the trajectory of the day. We will have little small groups to be able to discuss some of the themes, and we'll just kind of guide you through. And I realize I'm being quiet. I will try and speak up when it's my turn to get there. Okay.
And related to that, we will be recording parts of the day. So you can keep that in mind in terms of what you feel comfortable sharing in the large group discussions. Of course, the small group discussions won't be recorded. I think most of you heard, but in case you came in late, it's nice on these Living the Practice workshop days to wear a name tag, because a lot of us have known each other for years but still don't remember each other's names, sometimes related to age and sometimes related to other things. But so it really helps to keep a name tag on and have it visible so we can see it during the day and build community as we do this work. And then you might have noticed there's just a few jobs that help keep the center organized when we have big groups here for the whole day, keeping the bathrooms tidy, filling the water up. I forgot to put that down as one of the jobs, but those sort of things. So some of you know, but those of you who know the center or want to sign up so that the kitchen counter stays organized after the meal today. anybody can jump in. I have the iPad up here behind me. Normally it's in the white case, but we're keeping it closer. So if ever during the day you want to leave a donation using your credit card, you can just see me and I'll get you that iPad. Otherwise, most of you know that everything at the center is offered freely, and people could just contribute in a way that makes sense, that supports the center, the operations of the center, and also the livelihood of the teachers. And then just one more nuts and bolts thing. It's nice to stay to the end. Now, I know a couple people mentioned that they have to leave early, and you may not have mentioned, but you actually do have to leave early. But part of what Wynn was saying about this mutual responsibility for the work we do here, and this is really the aim of these Living the Practice workshops, is even though Wynn and I are obviously sitting a little higher and going to be doing more talking than most of you, but it we depend on the shared wisdom of the group, what people bring to the group. And there's it's important that people make a commitment, not just for your own learning, but for the container that we're creating here together. If you can, if you don't have to leave, to stay to the end. It's really supportive in that way. And we'll end right on time at 4 o'clock. So let's begin. So I'm going to do a guided reflection about forgiveness, just to sort of open up the topic and remind ourselves what we already know about the experience of forgiveness and what it is and what it isn't. And you can sit comfortably. You don't have to sit in a meditative pose, but this is this sort of middle territory between me listening to a talk and me meditating. There's this sort of middle territory. I encourage everybody to explore this generally in your Buddhist awareness practice. You could call it contemplation or reflection. This is actually the way you should be reading Dharma books or listening to Dharma talks. You should be in this reflective space where you hear something or you read something, and then you settle back and you reflect on it a little bit in terms of your direct and immediate experience. And then you hear some more, and then you reflect on it. And you're sort of, this is how we use the laboratory of our own immediate present moment happening of the body and mind, and we learn something about it. And the teaching we're getting, like for me, I'll give you some, some direction, and then you use that. It's like using that particular frame to look at your own emotional experience or your own sort of the past arising in the present moment as memory, as feeling in the body, content in the mind, and looking at that present moment activity of the body, mind, in terms of the frame that's being offered. So we'll do this, and then as Wynn mentioned, I'll just cover some of the basic principles, and then we'll have a little time for small group sharing, and then a break. So sitting comfortably and recognizing that there is this body here, this, it's really a mystery in a way, this experience of sensitivity. Normally we say the mind is sensitive or the heart is sensitive, but now we can not just leave that as a thought, but actually realize in a more immediate sense that there is a sensitivity. Right now, the heart, what we call the heart, is exposed to whatever arises and is felt. Whatever arises and is experienced. And there's really no stopping this sensitivity. We can be in moments for moments forgetful that the heart, that the mind is sensitive or exposed or vulnerable. But whether we are aware of the sensitivity or we're distracted, unaware, still, the heart remains sensitive, exposed. All life long, this heart is feeling. So in a direct way, we're just more honestly acknowledging that this heart, the sensitive heart, is feeling right now what it's feeling. And whether that feeling is a kind of numbness or a kind of hardness or a kind of warmth, kind of energetic feeling, whatever it might be, pleasant or unpleasant, we just acknowledge that this is how it feels. This is the sensitivity. This isn't a mistake. The fact that we're feeling something doesn't mean we did something wrong. It just comes with the territory of being a sensitive being, being a human being. And the more we sustain this honest reflection about the sensitive heart, the more that it becomes clear to us this first noble truth that the Buddha talks about, that there is something fundamentally uneasy, anxious, unfinished, unsettled about the heart. And again, this isn't a mistake, it's just what's there when we take the time. So even if your heart's feeling pretty good right now, even right at the core of things for you, it's a pleasant feeling, even that is uneasy because on some level the mind understands that it won't always be this way, or that this pleasant state I'm in right now is vulnerable to change. So whether we're aware of it or not, we can maybe sense a subtle instability or a subtle uncertainty, a subtle kind of exposure. And of course, we also notice what our tendency, how we tend to react or control that. I care about this sensitive heart. So the first part of forgiveness practice is this basic understanding that the sensitive heart is relevant. The rawness, this experience of exposure or vulnerability, or just more generally how the heart feels, is relevant in our lives. It's not a problem to solve, it's actually how we connect with our life. The sensitive heart is relevant, not as a thought, not as an idea, but the direct, immediate feeling into the heart, sensing into the heart, whether that feels numb, or nothing is there, hot or cool. It's relevant. And the more we have that basic respect for the sensitivity of the heart, we just start to get more familiar with the territory, maybe even now for you. Sort of the sense mapping out the wounds, the old wounds, the places of pain, the juicy places, places where there's energy. So this is the terrain that includes both the body and our thought and memory. A sense of unfinished business that we'd rather not remember, rather not feel. All those places where one way or another we justify staying away, justify keeping it buried, covered up. When we'll be talking a little later this morning about places of shame and unworthiness. all those lawsuits that remain unresolved between us and other people, even lawsuits we have against the world itself. It's not the world I signed up for, not the world I want. Places of self-righteousness, hate and rage, places of feeling a victim, feeling defeated, feeling oppressed. And just to hold the question today as we do our work together, is it safe to feel into these places, to begin to re-own the wounds and the places that are unfinished, the places that are scary? Is it okay to soften, to be intimate? Perhaps all human beings are wounded, each in their own way, having navigated their lives, the twists and turns, the joys and sorrows. Perhaps everybody has unfinished business. These entanglements, these unseen wounds. And we begin to open with the first insight in this work, which is that it is possible to be interested, whether initially it's just circling around those places that are unresolved, or touch and go, but that there is this other path other than avoidance and distraction and repression, which is to be interested in the unfinished business. Not to deny or blame or resign ourselves to bitterness, some story about how life is unfair. We can actually be curious. But it means, this curiosity means we let go of any kind of story we have. Like the story, I'm going to gain victory over these places of pain, maybe through revenge and then we'll be even, or maybe by pretending that I don't care that you hurt me or that I hurt you, or that I hurt myself. Maybe the resolution is moving into these places with an openness, not a certainty, but a curiosity and a deepening fearlessness that this is the way. And that opens us to a reframing of what grieving, healthy grieving is, not something to be avoided. But the skillful way, grieving is the word we use for the skillful way of letting pain, letting hurt, letting these wounds unwind and heal. Grieving is the word we use when we let whatever needs to move, move. Whatever needs to be felt, be felt. Whatever needs to be understood, we allow it to be understood. And of course, this real grieving, this wholesome grieving, takes time and courage and persistence and patience. But maybe all of us to some degree have learned that this hard way, in a sense, is the easy way, or there's no avoiding it. This is, of course, how we begin to loosen the habit of telling ourselves stories about our pain, our unresolved pain. Stories that are seductive and always star a strong sense of me or mine, you and yours, right? These dualistic ways of thinking. And this opens us to the next more subtle level in this practice, this process of forgiveness and healing, which is what in Buddhist practice we call insight, or a shift in view, shift in one's attitude or understanding. So when we do the opening work of just softening the heart, recognizing that the heart is sensitive, starting to map out the wounds, the unfinished business here in our heart, learning what wholesome grieving is all about, how to be intimate, how to let the pain move, how to let everything move, everything unfold, trusting the intelligence of the wounds themselves to unwind. Then that allows for the fourth step, which is this moment or moments of healing, which is really another way of saying moments of insight, a shift in understanding. So one of the first shifts of understanding is when we directly see that it's our thinking, our understanding about this inner pain that creates the inner pain. That the pattern of thinking, the way we think about these wounds, the harm somebody has done to us, the harm we've done to another, the harm we've done to ourselves. It's the habit of thinking about it within a particular frame, like you did it, I did it, that causes, that reestablishes the pain, the crunch in the heart, the depth of the ache. One of our teachers here who's since passed away, one of our original board members, Craig Vollmer, used to teach a forgiveness workshop for many years here at the center, and he would ask a question in a reflection like this. Whose energy is causing the pain right now? So when we feel the squeeze in the heart, feel some kind of dead weight in our heart around some unfinished business, some unresolved pain, whose energy is causing the pain right now? Why is it so hard to let go of our grudges? Right? There's some story about how they deserve our resentment, or I deserve my hate, my self-hate. I don't deserve forgiveness. It's like we have this sense of being personally responsible for distributing the pain of karma. Like, well, somebody did something bad, so they need to hurt, so I'm going to get tight and either shoot it at them, shoot the tightness at them, or shoot the tightness at myself. But of course, we immediately hurt. This heart right here is what hurts. So this is the first insight. This is not a small thing. This happens many, many times in our practice. You might see it right now in your own experience. You might remember moments in the past where you really directly, immediately saw the relationship between how the mind was understanding, the kind of story the mind was repeating, and the crunch in the heart, the dead weight in the heart, the ache in the heart. we begin to correlate that whenever there's ill will in our heart toward ourselves, toward another, toward the whole world, whenever there's ill will, the heart hurts. When there's not ill will, the heart experiences the freedom of non-aversion, of no ill will, no hate, no resentment. And then to learn to sustain those moments where we see that the heart is participating, the mind, the thinking mind, the conceiving mind is participating in its own suffering, then to sustain the letting, the natural letting go that happens, the next insight is really sensing the difference between forgiving, which is a moment of letting go of ill will. So we're learning that that moment of letting go of ill will, dropping ill will, seeing the unnecessariness of ill will, is different than trusting somebody to be skillful, or trusting ourselves to be skillful, or trusting the world to be fair. So it's not the same thing. Dropping ill will doesn't mean we have a sentimental or superficial idealistic idea of somebody. So you might think about somebody that you're working on forgiving, or you're someplace where you're practicing forgiving yourself, maybe for some addictive pattern. But just because you're willing to drop the toxic ill will, doesn't mean you trust yourself never to do that again. Because whether we do something or whether somebody else does something unskillful again, that has everything to do with the momentum of habit energy, not whether we're learning that it's wise to drop ill will, to forgive. So this leads us to the third insight, which is it's actually safe to live our life without being certain about who's guilty, who's not guilty, who should be punished, who doesn't deserve to be punished. Any kind of fixed views around all the lawsuits in our mind, in our heart, all the untended wounds that we feel, that actually we can have a really wholesome, healing relationship to these wounds without needing a fixed story, a fixed view about them. We can, in a way, ventilate them with just holding. Sometimes we talk about it as a don't know mind. But it isn't a feeble or a weak way just because we're not falling into the habit of needing certainty about what happened or who's to blame. We're much more interested in the reality that my heart feels like this now. This is how it feels in the body and the mind. So these are just three ways to talk about the insights that come in practice. The insight that our mind is participating is the primary cause for the crunch, the weight, the dead weight, the unresolved pain in our hearts, how our mind is thinking about it, the story the mind is repeating about it, how our mind is framing it. And that when we realize that whatever ill will the mind is repeating, that pattern of ill will, of hate, hating others, hating ourselves, it can be dropped. And what allows us to sustain the dropping, the non-aversion, is understanding that abandoning ill will does not mean abandoning intelligence about how to navigate our lives, about trusting, about how we take care of ourselves, keep ourselves safe, right? Whether safe from our own addictive patterns or safe from other people who are being unskillful, who are abusing us or harming us in some way, we can abandon ill will because it isn't helping and take care of ourselves. So again, the fruit of this reflection is just a deeper, clearer sense of forgiveness as the renouncing of anger and ill will, resentment against someone or something. That's it. It's just a willingness to abandon, to let go of ill will because it isn't helping. It's hurting. So just as we finish up this reflection, ask yourself, maybe you repeat the question a few times in your mind, am I willing to consider the letting go of ill will? Or am I willing to consider the letting go, the falling away of resentment? Is my mind or heart actually dependent on the story of being resentful or the story of hating myself or hating another? Do I need the identification to that story? Because the heart cares, it offers mercy. We don't hear that word very much. Right? We offer ourselves this tender-hearted mercy. That's why there's a letting go of ill will and resentment, because the heart cares about this heart right here. Because we felt identified with the pain and the fear, we thought, you know, mistakenly thought that we needed to withhold our own compassion, that we couldn't take care of ourselves by letting go of ill will. So if your eyes have been closed, feel free to open them and adjust. And of course, this sort of reflection isn't something that we do one time, but something we do over and over again, right? Where we find, whether we do it while we're taking a walk or we do it while we're doing a formal meditation, but we take the time to soften the heart, to realize, oh my God, there is a sensitive heart here. Right? Within that, you know, that itself is a big step, just to slow down enough that to be willing, it feels safe enough to be a vulnerable human being. And then we can map out the very real territory that there's unfinished business in this heart. You know, as opposed to that story we sometimes hear, especially Minnesota, you know, the sort of traditional or Northern European culture, in Minnesota, this kind of, oh, I'm okay. No, it's fine. And it's like, I mean, there are many toxic defenses that we human beings use. That's just one of them, right? To put sort of a nice little positive, I'm fine. How about them twins? You know, we change the subject. Because we don't want to acknowledge that actually, as a human being, as a sensitive being, there's this very omnipresent reality vulnerability and exposure and sensitivity. And to those of us who have been good at avoiding it, it becomes even, that territory becomes even more scary. I mean, it's one of the nice things about a community like Common Ground is that we have this permission to be sensitive and to acknowledge we have this unfinished business and to begin to map it out and to sort of know where the sore points are, the wounds are. And then when we can learn to be more intimate, like to really see that the any particular wound, unfinished business, is a beloved teacher, not a problem that I got to get rid of, but it's a teacher. And it teaches us these three insights. The mind is involved with suffering. Our mind, the habits of the mind, is directly complicit in suffering. And that, what was the second one? This is why you write notes. Second insight. Oh, yeah. That it's like really getting the difference, because we can misinterpret the moment of letting go of ill will as if I don't have to remain being a sensitive creature, right? Like we go right to the absolute. Like ill will doesn't make sense, but the relative still makes sense. Like I've got to navigate, I've got this tender body, I've got this tender emotional body, and I still have to navigate all the power dynamics in the world, right? That there are hungry beasts that want to eat me up, you know, some version of that, whether it's in at work or, you know, in sports or whatever sort of dynamics we're part of in our social settings, in our just worldly settings. We have to navigate that. So just because we let go of ill will doesn't mean we don't have to navigate power and navigate life situations with skill. Doesn't mean we stop taking care of ourselves. That's the second insight. That we can do both the absolute, the deepening of the absolute insight that ill will is not helpful. Love is the way. And still exist in the relative world of having to earn a living and navigate. Those of you who are parents of teenagers or soon-to-be teenagers or, you know, whatever it is, that we can do both. And then the last insight is, third insight, to basically it's the maturing of the insight, because we'll fall back into the lawsuits because it creates a strong sense of self. So the third insight is realizing we don't need a strong sense of self that mostly is built around our lawsuits, the unfinished business in our life, right? How many of us have mind politics, right? Read the news, listen to the news to rev up our self-righteousness and our hate and our holier than thou and basically keep reestablishing the sense of self and separation because of that. Well, maybe we can have a don't know mind. Maybe we can let our mind more and more often be unformed in this whole world of healing the heart. And then the last point I made in the guided reflection is just to repeat to yourself how simple it is, that, and not a demand, but just a question. Can the heart... Does the heart need to hold on to ill will? Can ill will be abandoned? Is ill will necessary? I mean, there are obviously different ways to ask this question. But just this very persistent challenge, not harsh challenge, but coming out of compassion. Do I need ill will to be a skillful human being? Whatever we look at, like a particular relationship, do I need ill will here? You're in traffic. Do I need ill will here? You're raising your kid. Do I need ill will here? You're navigating the territory with your partner. Is ill will helpful? Is it adding, contributing here? You know, politics or social activism. Is there a place for ill will? Does it add value? And then to really look, this is a reflection. So we're not like looking for the answer, we're looking to study it directly in our experience. What does ill will contribute? What does it take away? So we're going to break in small groups in just a minute, but I want to just kind of cover a few more elements, principles in the practice that I probably touched on briefly, but I just want to make sure that they're talked about. So the first point I want to make is just a little history, you know, in the way the Buddha taught. He didn't talk a lot about forgiveness. I mean, there were a few things built in to the tradition. One of the most central and foundational teachings from the Buddha is this importance of, in Pali the language, it's sila, S-I-L-A, and it gets translated as integrity or ethical conduct or morality. But, you know, we have a lot of baggage around those kinds of words. So it's really this deepening value of non-harming, right? This eventually, in moments probably for each of us, it's been really unshakable, right? Where we really see that more than anything, my heart values not causing unnecessary harm, right? Have you had moments like that where it just was really clear? And sometimes in surprising ways where, you know, you could squash a mosquito, but you just have a sense that even though it looks quite different, that being is actually not that different than this being. I don't know if you caught the article in the New York Times recently about ticks. It was a pretty big article. It seemed like it was on the front page of the digital version of the New York Times, or, you know, got highlighted at least. But, you know, it's just scary stuff. It just seems so natural to hate ticks, to be afraid of ticks. And this is that territory about dropping ill will but still taking care of ourselves, like not wanting to get Lyme's disease. And so there's so many places like this. So to see this value of non-harming and to see how the work of forgiveness is a very natural expression of this deepening value, like a value that has real power, that makes us want to look at our choices when we're buying things, whether buying groceries or buying clothes or buying other products. What does this deepening value of non-harming look like in that place of our life? What does the deepening appreciation and value, because we're drawing some joy. It's the bliss of blamelessness, as the Buddha calls it. So sila is not like a big, heavy should. That's why our programming around morality, we have to jettison. And we have to see morality as a direct, immediate pathway to happiness. So when we commit, when we deepen this value in non-harming, it's because we're feeling enlivened by this. So this might be something you share in your small group in just a few minutes. It's just how this value of non-harming is alive and well or not so alive and well in you, and then how it your interest in forgiveness has roots into this value of not wanting to contribute to your own harm, the harm of your heaviness in your own life, and harming, causing pain for others. What healthy, balanced human being, human mind, would actually want another living being to suffer, right? I mean, just pick up immediately in your mind right now somebody you think deserves to suffer, right? But then when we reflect from a more balanced place, we may very clearly want them to stop harming other people, right? Or want ticks to find a way to not spread Lyme's disease. But do we want the tick to suffer? Do we want the politician to suffer? I mean, I know reflexively we might say yes, but when we're just looking, when we're not feeling threatened in that moment, when we're feeling relatively safe, do we actually want another living being to suffer? So this is something to share in the small group, like, what is your mind, your heart's relationship to this value of non-harming? And then how does that then play out around forgiveness, around lawsuits that you have with yourself? You know, I'm just using lawsuits as sort of a figure of speech, yourself. They use it a lot. This one author uses it a lot with the I Ching. Wynne and I have used the I Ching over the years, this way of this system in ancient Chinese culture of just understanding the unfolding of life. It's like a lot of these old ancient systems, Enneagram, just kind of can open up like a way of reflecting on your own life. And she translates some term in the I Ching, this ancient text, as lawsuits. And just that habit we have, feel so justified with our lawsuits. Maybe this is a good place. There's so much, you know, where this could be a lifelong workshop. But this gives us about 15 or 20 minutes for the small groups. So we thought for this first, we'll have a more substantial, we're actually three small groups today. This one we're about to have. Then at lunch, Wynne and I will encourage you to break into small groups while you have your lunch. And those of you who have forgot to bring your bag lunch today, when you come back, you'll meet with other people who had to go out and get a lunch, come back. So we'll figure that out later. And then later in the afternoon, we'll actually send you to different places in the building for your small group. And maybe some of you will want to do that just so it isn't so loud in this room. But I think for this first time round, we'll just use people around you. And let's just keep it, anything that I brought up today, you can reflect on when it's your turn to share. But if you don't have anything, then go right to reflecting out loud for the two or three people that are with you. What is your heart, your mind's relationship to the value of non-harming? How has your appreciation or value around not harming yourself or other living beings, how has it actually expressed itself in your life? And how has it expressed itself in terms of forgiveness or non-forgiveness? For example, what's in the way of that value then finding its way to a place where you're not able to forgive, where you're holding resentment toward yourself or toward another? Okay? And then remember, I'm just going there. Yeah. So it's nice to sit close together so that you don't have to talk loudly, because, you know, if one group starts to talk loudly, then all the other groups start to talk loudly. Decide the order. Make sure you know each other's name. So you might even want to introduce yourself. It's also a nice time to say something around the pronouns you prefer. Some of you may not have heard this, but especially in the younger adult culture, there's really been a pretty pronounced change, or at least it's just more on the surface of our culture, where people, not an insignificant in our community, group of people don't feel comfortable with the binary pronouns, the he and him and the she and her. So it's just a nice gift to people who aren't comfortable with those pronouns for everyone just to say what pronouns they're comfortable with. So some people, for example, prefer they and them. They don't feel us in terms of gender as fitting neatly into the category of being a he or being a she. Okay, so that's a nice thing to do right at the beginning. It just takes a few seconds just to see what pronoun. So that at the end, when there's an open discussion, you're not referring to somebody with a pronoun that doesn't make sense to them. And then as Wynne was just reminding me, there's a whole art, it's really a meditation about how you do the sharing. So when it's your turn, you get 2 or 3 minutes just to share. And you get those 2 or 3 minutes even if you don't have anything to say. So then silently, all three or four of you, you're holding that space of silence. You're making, as best you can, everyone feel safe with that space of silence until you have something to say. So you just keep reflecting on the topic of non-harming and forgiveness and how that looks in your life and what's in the way of it operating in your life or anything else that seems relevant from the discussion thus far. You just keep reflecting on it, and then if you still have time, you bring it up. And part of the way we hold that safe space is just stay grounded in your body. Feel safe with the experience of your body sitting there. Have a peaceful, kind relationship with your body. And that tends to expand to create safety for everybody in the small groups. Then each person will have 2 to 3 minutes. If you're within earshot, Wynn and I will be ringing the bell. Some of you will be in spaces maybe where you won't hear, so then just time yourselves. Each person gets 2 or 3 minutes, and then there will be about 5 or so minutes for just an open discussion. That's the time to ask clarifying questions if you didn't understand what someone was pointing to or to share a similar experience. But when it's your formal sharing, you're not commenting on somebody else's sharing at that point. You're just, as Wynn said earlier in the day, speaking directly from your practice. So any questions about that? So when you break into groups of 3 or 4 now, don't immediately go to people you know. Just find people around you. Decide if you want to stay in this place, whether you want to go to one of the other rooms in the building. It's 10:47. We have about 20 minutes. So we'll come back, let's say, and we're going to have a break. So Wynn and I will ring the bell, then start finishing up, and then you can have a little stretch break, use the toilet, and we'll come back about 20 after 11. Sound good? Any other things we should say? Okay, any questions about that? Nuts and bolts? Yeah, Robin? Yeah, for anybody within earshot. Yeah, yep. Same question? Great. So stay on the lookout for people who aren't being included and align your group so that everyone feels, because otherwise we'll have some forgiveness work to do, even about breaking into small groups. So go ahead and do that now, and then find a place for your group.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.